Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
Welcome to Black History Month.
Hey.
We are black.
Blackity. Black, black, black.
We're history. That's my little niece. She says, that's her song. We're black. We're history.
How cute is that?
It's adorable. Okay, so it's Black History Month. We decided we are going to talk about the black church. We kind of talked about it a little bit last week.
Yeah, widening the conversation.
Yeah, this is kind of like an ode to black church. This is a love letter, which I never expected to write.
Okay.
About the black church.
All right.
And it's not that I dislike the black church, but, you know, after coming through a period where you were distant, well, I was distant from the black church for different reasons, to be back here, it's a new decade, new me. So.
Yes.
The black church.
Okay.
All right. So last week we talked about how faith is an inseparable part of black life.
Yeah.
However exactly. That faith looks. It's Christian faith, Muslim faith, African traditional faith, whatever. Like there's and a big part of that faith, as you pointed out, is the fellowship, the community that surrounds the faith.
Yep.
And there's a reason for that, and we'll talk about that in a little while. But when I say faith, it's charged with all of those things, the community, the identity, and things like that. So the black church in America has gone through many changes, but it started off as a haven for enslaved Africans. Now, these Africans came from different parts of Africa.
So the continent. Yeah,
so even if you just talk about West Africa, you got Nigeria, Benin, Togo, you got the Ivory Coast, you got all of these places. And in all of these places, they all had different beliefs.
Yep.
So they all get collected onto a slave ship and transported across the world. When they arrive here, speaking different languages, having different belief systems, and then being forced by people that they don't know who...
under threat of death.
Right. They're forced into community. And that community is an enslaved community. But when they aren't able to live as free as they had been, as their whole lives have been, they started to butt up against each other with the different beliefs and things like that and started to form something different than
very
what
different.
They knew.
Exactly.
And so the black church comes out of this experience where you have people who are coming from someplace and they remember their traditions. Maybe they were young and some traditions may be misremembered. Maybe it's been a while. They have these cultural memories that they're retaining while they're being forced to adopt this different version of a religion that some may have known, some may not have. And so that creates a beautiful thing. This community that's forming is also shaping the identity of the people now. Because you can hold on to what you were, but if you know you'll never be that again, because how are you going to get back?
Right.
And your names are being taken and your family's being taken. You don't have any connection to who you were.
Exactly.
So then you have to discover who you are.
You have to decide who you're going to be.
Right.
So it can't be washed over that Christianity plays a huge part in the development of this aspect of the black experience, where regardless of belief, spiritual belief, we know that Christianity and Islam were present on the continent during the time of the trade.
Right.
So people are being transported. They're being resorted, okay? And then they're being distributed. And I want to use those terms on purpose because we're talking about property. We're talking about possessions. So they're being transported. They're being resorted according to whatever the output was going to be. And they're being distributed all throughout the Western Hemisphere to work, to live, to exist. And there are just certain things that human beings are going to do because we are mostly a communal species. We move in groups. And in those groups, we tend to decide and decipher what people are good at and what their roles will be in community. And we use that all over to create what becomes settlement. So that's the background. Here, these different disparate communities, these different disparate cultural groups that are now being resorted just like we say in Christianity, to hide the word in your heart, people began to hide their identities, their true identities in their hearts, only to express their true nature, maybe not a representative type of figure or their masked selves. They tend to affiliate their ability to display their spirituality with a feeling of freedom. So this becomes the core of what propels the development of this, of what ultimately becomes the church. So it's not just happening amongst enslaved communities, even in free Black communities, as people were able to group themselves together in the way that they wanted to. Increasingly, you had Black moving out of white churches and saying, I'll start my own. So that's how Bethel AME in Philadelphia started, where eventually you get the first Black AME bishop, which he's starting a church that was out of a Methodist tradition, but no longer wanting to worship with white parishioners.
Yes. So one of the things that those slaves did as they
Richard Allen.
That's right. I knew the name.
I was like, and who am I talking about? But go ahead.
And Absalom Jones. Both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the things those slaves did as they were forming those communities and adopting these new ways of being, they took what they knew. They took the cultural memory that they did retain and they injected it in this new thing. And it's such a brilliant way to remember because it serves as a mnemonic where, okay, this saint is this Orisha. Like, we're going to talk about this saint, but we know that the Orisha does that function.
Yep.
And so they were able to retain these elements of their different cultural beliefs embedded in this new faith that was forming. All right. So that faith ends up becoming the bedrock of the Black church. So the way that faith is expressed through the experiential nature. So you may have in Benin, Togo, Voodoo. So you may have a ritual where you can contact the dead and the person serves as a vessel for the dead and that person speaks. And that can be transcribed onto a Pentecostal situation where William Seymour, who was one of those the key people who started the Pentecostal church, these cultural memories were embedded that way, and so they ended up being retained. Now the issue is that the cultural practices and the identity was retained through the religious practices, but not always remembered. So
as to why,
as to why we're doing this, what this means, why it is. And so we talked in a previous episode about the African ring shout, where the group would dance in a
circular,
but it's always always counterclockwise. And that would denote the Congo cosmogram. So this was something that was known. So when you look at the Pentecostal shout, it's the same type of thing. It's usually in the same pattern. It's usually the same, like the people gather around and it's all the same. And so all of these things are African. The Black church has known to express its faith is at its heart, it's African and it's American. So it's something familiar and it's something new.
Right. So it's African and it's Western. This very African interpretation of spirituality comes across in various sects. And we see it in various countries, so where the diaspora is present. So even as we acknowledge the voodoo or voodoo, and we acknowledge Santeria, these are places where under different systems, like a Roman Catholic system, there was an ability to more directly correlate the saints with the Orishas and then have a separate faith practice that reinforced that. Of course, we've already talked about how when that type of faith practice does not emanate from a Eurocentric rooting, that it has been othered and been demonized. And this is not to say that there are not some aspects of every religion that people, you know, tend to be taboo about. But we have to be very careful. We have to consider the source of the critique that these things are somehow not of God. When the people develop themselves expressly to be a community of God, but were able to retain practices and characteristics that did not have the permission of the ruling class to exist.
Right. And so to not have the permission, but to do it anyway is audacious. And I love it.
Yes.
I love that they did this. So let's talk about what's African that may be familiar to us. So the preacher in the black church is the griot.
Yeah.
The preacher is the one with the cadence and the news.
Yep.
And the preacher is informing you about earthly things and spiritual things, and sometimes earthly things
and
disguises.
Teaching lessons.
Yeah.
He's telling stories to teach lessons.
Right. And there's this big personality, and everyone's gathered around and watching it. And they wait all week for this one event, mm-hmm. where they can hear from this one griot. And that is the black preacher as a character is African. Like, mm-hmm. That didn't exist until it happened here.
Mm-hmm.
In experience-based worship. So that really wasn't a thing in American Western culture, where there was this need to show themselves as worthy of the European scholarship. So you have theologians out of Germany and different parts of Europe. And on the Western side, like, well, we're smart too, you know. Mm-hmm. We came out of the Protestant Reformation with Martin Luther, and we're over here, we're doing big things, you know. We can understand the scriptures. And so an experience-based worship that, mm-hmm. is not formalized in the way that we would understand certain things, like that you can't put you can't say, well, this should be this way and not this way,
right?
To be able to say that this person is experiencing God in a way that I might not, and that's okay. That is African. That is something that came with us. That freedom of expression, the way that break out in a shout, dance, run around the church, music.
And the collision of all of that, mm-hmm. artistic and creative expression,
mm-hmm.
provided these windows and these moments of freedom within bondage. So the ability to shout, dance, and sing.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine living in an environment, and some of us can relate, because we realize you give up a lot of your voice to keep the peace, to not be controversial. But imagine living in a system where every word is meant to be in deference,
mm-hmm.
or the value of your communication was only as good as your audience. So only what you were saying to people who were valued in society mattered, and only what they were saying to you was supposed to matter.
Mm-hmm.
Within these faith spaces, now I'm speaking to my fellow person, my fellow equal, and together we're building up a kinship.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep talking about this fellowship, but we're building up a kinship where I might not be free to touch you,
mm-hmm.
or to pray over you, or to hover over you, or to show you care, or to sing with you at the top of my lungs,
right.
when, you know, for this moment. I might not be free to do that. Our family might be separated according to, remember I said, resorted and distributed.
Yeah.
So our family might be separated according to what someone else thinks you're good at. But in your heart, you are a wonderful singer. And when you depart my company,
mm-hmm.
all you've asked God for was to see me again. Because we live in a situation where we can't take that for granted.
Right.
So we're going to be happy. And we're going to shout and dance and sing when we get together. So these things get reinforced.
Call and response. We brought that with us.
Call and response.
So like you'll hear in church.
And it's
like,
in our music.
It's in our music, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Even as the preacher is speaking, you'll hear the talk back to, mm-hmm. the preacher, like.
Ain't nobody saying nothing.
Right, ain't nobody
Talk
saying nothing.
To me.
Preacher, like my cousin must be like, tell the whole story.
I wish I had some help in here.
Yeah, so all of that stuff, like talking, the preacher talking and, mm-hmm. the congregation talking back, that's, we bought that.
Yes, and it's a huge exchange of energy.
Yes.
And again, just going back into the, going and framing around this rooting, literacy is not something that we are openly trading in.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't leave a review on Yelp that church was really good.
Yeah.
We can't write anything, including our names.
Right.
We can make our mark. For those who can, if they were in a situation where, again, I can openly express these skills, then they're not threatening. But that call and response reinforced our retention of the Bible, our retention of the tenets of this new faith that is growing.
Right.
So participating in that is just like, I remember back in the day, we used to do dictation. Your teacher would say a sentence and you had to write the sentence as they said it, and you would be graded on, did you write what I said or did you write what I heard? Mm-hmm. This is how we begin to move large segments of the community into being able to say the same things and mean mm-hmm. the same things. So that call and response actually helped us build our language.
Right. It's also an indicator of how we level power. So Octavia Butler has this idea in her book, Dawn, in the Xenogenesis series, that one of the most damaging elements of humanity, the thing that holds us back, is our hierarchy. Mm. And through call and response, it's not just the preacher preaching and everyone listening. Right. Everyone's participating. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a voice in what's going on. That preacher mm-hmm. may be preaching or teaching, but we all getting our say. Mm-hmm. Like, we all are going to be in this.
Which is evident in prayer meeting, mm-hmm. Evident in altar call, and evident in praise and worship or testimony, where people are able to speak on their experience yeah. for the benefit of others. And then what? People say, not the only one.
Right.
You know,
right.
Not the only one going through. I'm not the only one saying this.
Long church. That's African. One of my professors, Dr. Lee, was on the show. He tells a story about when they went to Liberia and they were supposed to start the service and didn't start on time. Mm. And so he's asking, when is it going to start? It's going to start. It's going to start soon. You know, it's gonna, and so he keeps asking, well, we start soon. And that's the clock is not something that everyone has. Mm-hmm. And in his experience in Africa, in Liberia, he was like, yo, it was about not when time you start. It's when everyone got there. Mm-hmm. That's when it starts. When the community is together, we start. And while sense. We're together, we're there for as long as we need to be.
And understand that even on the Sabbath, where hopefully everybody's keeping their agreement and there is no work taking place. Mm-hmm. This outward reflection of something like church was one of the times where you could expect to not be bothered with the system that you live within. Like, this is your break.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you get to walk around and, you know, be your very best self, but at least in your mind, you are not leading with, what do I have to do with some, you know, for somebody else today? So that long service format could also be contributed to the longer we say we're in church. Mm-hmm. The longer that we say we're doing this.
Yeah, we're not doing
that. We're not doing that other thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's that, it's this moment that we're together.
Yep.
Like you said, we're not working. We are us right now.
We are us right now. And we're talking about the root.
Yes.
But even as the roots of our faith begin to manifest and grow into the actual establishment of the Black church, some of that length of time that we spend in the church has to do with some of the things we acknowledged from last week, that the church was the center of activity. Mm-hmm. So there's time set aside for the business of community, for, you know, regular church business, to have activities, to have programs,
yeah.
because the building is fulfilling so many other needs, or the gathering of community while I have everybody's attention. Here are these critical things that need to happen.
Yeah.
So it wasn't always what we kind of have now, multiple services on a Sunday
right.
and things timed so well. On the one hand, it might increase access, but does it do something for depth? So
right. So like the Jewish people have the synagogue where the community, that's the community hub. Mm-hmm. Everything happens there, not just worship. In Greek culture, they had Greco-Roman culture, they had the gymnasium
mm-hmm.
where everything happened there. That's the Black church. And for us, the Black church is, it works almost like a safe deposit box where this cultural memory is retained mm-hmm. in this thing
yep.
and it's going to be safe there. And so for all of these centuries, it's been safe there,
mm-hmm.
whether we know why it's there or not.
Right.
We still carry it. It's still yep. part of the cultural retention.
And I do think it's very affirming, and it does a lot to reestablish connections to Africa, to lands that we have never seen mm-hmm. amongst people that we've never met. When we are doing the same things,
mm-hmm.
you know, this past 2019, Ghana was in the news a lot or definitely pushed out to the forefront because they orchestrated the year of the return. And so many people were visiting
mm-hmm.
Ghana and other countries in West Africa, not only to just get a glimpse, but there had been an invitation and people took that invitation and took that trip. I can't think of something that gives you chills, mm-hmm. like seeing what you thought were the latest dance moves. And then you see dances amongst that have been done for hundreds of years, and we move our bodies the same, but we didn't learn it mm-hmm. from one another. So it's like, where was it? And yeah. and it was hidden, and then it becomes liturgical, or right. it becomes, you know, some other creative expression.
And that's part of the reason why faith is so intertwined with life mm-hmm. for us, is because that little knapsack of identity is retained yeah. right in the faith.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal. And you don't want to separate that, because depending on who you are and where you are, like, mm-hmm. who am I? Like this, like right. these are the things that remind. So it's not just African. It's also American Western. Like
yeah,
you said.
It's so. Western. It has its European roots as well. You know, we were hand in hand building this thing, mm-hmm. believe it or not. Yeah. And again, Christianity and its various forms facilitated this overall system.
Right.
It did help build exactly what we critique, what we, some of the things that we wish we could do away with, and some of the things that honestly we benefit from
yeah.
because of how they've been designed. But like in a place like New Orleans, where during its colonial period, it was led by three different European rooted nations, either European nations or different nations. It was run by the Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
It was run by, a lot of people know about the French, but in between two sections of French rule, it was run by the Spanish. Ultimately, the Americans, who had only been American for two generations,
yeah.
they purchased it. And Christianity and Catholicism, Black Catholicism coming out of Louisiana, looks so different. There's an indelible imprint of
oh, yeah.
the Congo on all that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And the retention of that culture has benefited from how different churches did things. In Roman Catholicism, when you say, who am I? In Roman Catholic churches, you'll know, because the church kept a registry of your baptism, slave or free.
Yeah.
So some of our best records, this is why, you know, Katrina touched people, because if you knew what you were looking at, you knew that you were looking at hundreds of years of records that might have been destroyed because they were even allowed to
right.
be created.
Mm.
So this, but that tradition of Catholic life superimposed with very African roots, superimposed with one of the very few places where you had very, very strong example of free Black community juxtaposed with slave community. That faith tradition is extremely rich.
Mm.
Like, we think Mardi Gras is a party, and it is, but it is a high, holy reflection of Black spirituality
mm.
in that region of the
yeah,
country.
Yeah.
Right. And it is that because of what we uniquely bring to that. And that's been hiding in Black Catholic churches.
Yeah, it's right.
You
there
know,
in
Louisiana, compared to what we might say is, you know, Black Baptist churches
right.
in Mississippi or Alabama, or, you know, in this area, more Baptist, Pentecostal, AME.
Mm.
It's there.
Yeah.
It's there, and it gave us a common way to discuss being Black in different ways mm-hmm. in different areas.
Yeah, wherever we show up,
like, yeah.
we bring ourselves to the party all the time. So
all the time.
Let's talk about the American or the Western sides of it, because
okay.
that's also tied up in it. So
right.
the structural hierarchy. So apostles, bishops, that's not, that, we didn't bring that. That's not
no,
our thing.
No,
and
that's
so
there.
That ended up being a part of the faith expression, because it was just something that was taught. Male-centered leadership, not necessarily.
Yeah, not African. All the time.
Yeah, because there are many times where the women would be the leaders of the faith for where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the rituals, like the specific rituals like baptism, things like that,
mm-hmm.
Those were added to whatever we had, or we added ourselves to that. The social justice element, the ability to even know that things are not equal. Like, we didn't bring that with us. That happened when we came here, where we say, wait a minute, we're not in the same position as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
We need to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
So and so that becomes a part of the church, and that exists because things have not been equal since right. we got here.
And you have other groups agitating for, like, we again, we're centered, but that happening inside Black churches is also reflected in it happening inside majority churches, mm-hmm. where marginalized membership or people now are saying, I want to be reflected yeah. in the high, you know, in, right. in the hierarchy, or here's what's important to me. And I want to see that reflected in this body.
Right. Formal theology. And what I mean by that is the settlers that came here, the colonizers that came here, mm-hmm. came from places where they were debating theology, and they left actually because they could not resolve those disputes.
Right.
And so actually analyzing the scriptures and being trained a certain way, and then they bring that over here. Mm-hmm. That's not what we had when we came. That's not to say that there were not specific practices, rules, and things like that that we brought with us, but an actual formalized, articulated theology is something that we adopted.
Yes.
As a result of being here.
Yeah.
Capitalism. We didn't bring that.
No.
We're just forced to do it.
Capitalism brought us.
Right.
Well, mercantilism brought us, and then eventually it evolved into what we see now. But it's important to acknowledge that Black church in America exists within not only a certain cultural and political system, but it does exist within a certain economic system.
Right. And as much as we hate it, we can't get rid of it right yeah. now. Anti-blackness. that's important, because as we bring these cultural memories with us, mm-hmm. the anti-blackness says, don't bring them.
Right. And don't do them. Don't right. behave this way.
And so that forces the enslaved Africans to subvert what was happening and actually insert it in a way that's
coded.
Right. That's coded. Mm-hmm. But it sets up this divide between what we currently understand as church as separate from the reason why we even got there.
Right.
So we have this Black church experience that we live on a weekly basis, mm-hmm. while simultaneously having an aversion to the culture that birthed the experience.
I mean, to be Black here is to live that. So many people have said it so many different ways, but it's like, I like this aspect of whatever Blackness might mean, mm-hmm. but I have no use for these other expressions or these other aspects. The other thing about the anti-Blackness is that it is mimicked within our own church structure.
Yes.
It's one thing to be rejected or to be marginalized or to be asked out by a congregation that is in no way like you. It is another thing altogether to not be welcomed into a congregation because maybe your rooting or your nurturing has been different. So again, the roots of certain churches, if we're honest about history, the anti-Blackness shows up in, let's say, spaces where colorism was made an issue. Not just your condition of freedom, but do you appear to be on the same social hierarchy as the one that we have to acknowledge in the majority space? So colorism is real. Mm-hmm. And there were institutions and definitely churches. We used to call them blue vein societies, where that was your entree into however that community was moving. And they did. They had their own churches, social clubs, whatever. And so did darker skinned African Americans. So mm-hmm. it's two sides of the same coin. The anti-Blackness and the racism also has to do with isolating and removing or mitigating or manipulating
yeah.
Blacks and their institutions that have to thrive in these majority spaces mm-hmm. or are expected to exist. Classism is important because sometimes different aspects of our experience can be conflated with anti-Blackness. Mm-hmm. So to be poor is not to say that you are in no way redeemable or that you won't ever have a good quality or successful, but churches that were more well-to-do mm-hmm. might not open their doors to poor Blacks for worship, mm-hmm. but maybe they might make it their goal to always serve them, as in, you know, less than. So like you say, some of these hierarchies that didn't serve us, yeah. we mimic them.
Right. So another way to identify the anti-Blackness is just in what happens in your church. So if you find yourself saying, well, my shrine is not okay, mm-hmm. but we can go to this communion table, that's not okay. You know right. what I mean? Like, if
you need
if,
to think through that.
Right. Just think through what's going on. You know,
yeah.
you're saying that possession is this other thing, but speaking in tongues is okay and yeah. all that stuff. Or yeah. this blood ritual is not fine, but right. it's okay.
And we talked about that in our witchcraft yeah. show.
It's Jesus's blood. Is this okay? Yeah. Like, the anti-blackness causes you to not be able to see the ironies there.
Right.
And so that's damaging if you don't see it. So right. so the Black church ends up being this fusion of these African cultural memories forming in this new Western environment, mm-hmm. this American environment.
Very hot, yeah. Harsh and hostile.
Right, and so it's a
black
different
existence.
Thing.
this
thing has not existed anywhere in the world before.
Right.
You could take this back to Africa, in some parts of Africa where it's traditionally going to be like, what is going on, unless it's been exported there,
mm-hmm.
which we through missions and things like that.
Right.
So, the Black church has not been all great. We have to acknowledge the harm that church has done to certain communities, i.e. women, mm-hmm. LGBTQ, and even poor people, as we talked about last week in terms of taking out resources and not actually...
And investing them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The inability to actually identify this fusion of these two cultural ideas or cultural ways of being, the inability to interrogate that has kind of led to us doing some of the harm. So we come from a place where women can be faith leaders. It's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they be faith leaders over here?
Or why do we still struggle with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's always been gay people.
I know.
Always.
Always.
Why are we acting like this is a... We're going to do a dedicated show to this. I've resolved
yeah,
it.
We should.
Yeah,
but
because we haven't. We've done different shows about topics relating to LGBTQ family, but we got to do a specific show on that. I want to talk about the Black church has done some harm to Black people.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is just because there's these cultures bumping up against each other, and embedded in part of that new Black amalgam of faith is anti-Blackness. So
yeah.
it does turn on itself
mm-hmm.
and make things difficult.
Right.
But the church can be redeemed. And
it can be.
And so we have to look at things for what they are. So, for instance, in the Hebrew Bible, there's talk of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is done in lieu of a name for God. So it's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is the God of our ancestors.
Hmm.
We prioritize the God of the Jewish ancestors above the God of our ancestors.
Hmm.
And so if you think about it like a scale, one side is really up high.
Mm-hmm.
The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the mm-hmm. God of our ancestors is really down low. Now, it doesn't have to be that way, but that's just the way we feel like it must be. You could easily do it the other way. You could prioritize the God of your ancestors, and the other one moves lower, or you can balance it out. You can do whatever you want, but the reason why I say that is because the way that we arrived at prioritizing the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is because the colonization of the faith, like the forcing of this idea that this is the only way to encounter God
mm-hmm.
has been ingrained in the American faith experience.
Yep.
That's not a requirement.
No.
And just like our ancestors had done before in Santeria, where they take their orishas and they insert them into or transpose them onto the faith, you still have the option of honoring your God.
So let's get into this, and we don't have to go too far, but that's why I said that it's important to understand that these two major religions, Christianity and Islam, were present on the continent mm-hmm. at the time of the diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
It is important to say that because that ability to reassign those divine qualities to gods that we knew previously, the retention of the ability to do that as we rediscover those connections, that goes to disrupt
mm-hmm.
that flow of anti-Blackness, that goes to disrupt capitalist Christianity, that goes to disrupt an overly westernized reflection of this faith tradition, because it was present, it was modified, changed, and muted.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had to find a way to regurgitate. I say all the time, the spirit wants to reconcile with itself.
Yes. So The reason why we have the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is because there was a group of people who existed in a pluralistic society where there were other gods around, and they decided we need the gods that our ancestors worship. And so there's this mythos built up around the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that's what they needed to establish themselves as a nation, to solidify their cultural identity. And that served them well. It just so happened that that God became known and other people adopted it. But to retain your cultural identity is part of the function of the Black church. So you have no requirement to only acknowledge the gods of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Mm. What about your cultural identity?
Yeah. And a lot of people really just, they don't know. My point is merely historical. It's like, allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Hope. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I was already up in here. Matter of fact, what's resonating within your heart, even though you don't know what to call it, is that this is actually the tradition that you come from. When you center yourself, we talk about some awesome stuff. But if you are honoring the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, then that means that you are understanding that particular story or that coming together of those characteristics as it is happening in Egypt.
That's exactly right.
So, Egypt, guess where that is?
It is Eastern.
So, even outside of that, Egypt is not in a bubble. There are other societies that are carrying these ideas. And even as, even if you looked at it on a map and you said, wow, okay, we know that people might have walked up into Asia, but what happens if they walk back? Where did they go? This is how you move ideas across major land spaces, caravans, trading, as I'm trading gold and meat and food and silver and all of these things. I'm going to tell you what I heard, you know, in when I was outside of what is now modern day Ethiopia, where if we were not afraid to confront and to learn, just learning different things. When you look at the ancient churches in Ethiopia, when you look at what those gods look like, they don't look foreign. There is no way that they could have ever been misrepresented in some of the ways that we know that they were, to what? To further, let's say, political ideals, or to further a cultural hierarchy, a social hierarchy, how we wanted the world to work. Mm-hmm. You go to different areas of the world, though, where people have not been forced to decenter themselves in their own story. The divine looks like them.
Yeah, and they've always done this. Ethiopian Christian art is
the church at Lulabella.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, and it's old. It's older than white Jesus.
It's older than the Vatican. Yet people look at the Vatican as this shining example of what all of this Christian mythos really looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a building older than it that is nowhere near Italy, nowhere near Vatican City, that purports that the divine don't look like that.
Yeah.
We should not overlook the gift of those buildings still existing and our buildings exist, where if we've pushed out that representation, where do you get a black Jesus from? Remember the Good Times episode?
Ned DeWino was black Jesus.
But you get a black Jesus from the interrogation of why doesn't the divine, if I'm made in his image, why doesn't the divine look like me?
Yeah. This is so important for the black
church. This is so important. This is how we did it. Probably the most primary reason that I don't appreciate critiques that we can't recover from for in the black church is that when we diminish its importance after it's done all of its important work, I feel like that cheapens the critique. So it's very easy to critique the black church that was vital in moving a community of millions of people from one social status to the other, or pushing those same millions and their descendants from treatment before secular laws from one way to hopefully another. It's very easy to critique that when we think that work is either done or we've gone beyond how maybe an old school approach might, you know, do that. Mm-hmm. Our churches are vital.
Right.
We need, it's just like a phone tree. Mm-hmm. As I said before, you got to take care of your things. Yeah. And this is our thing. And it has done its work.
It has. That's the thing. We cannot continue to be powered by our Africanness while maintaining an aversion to it.
Yeah.
That's deadly for us. When the faith arrived here on this land, immediately it began to evolve. Yeah. And it has not stopped evolving. And it's picked up some good things, some not so good things. Yeah. And it will continue to evolve. And so to speak of church or anything like the church has done it, that's not the case, especially with our church. Like, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Because we're so intertwined, because that's the hub of our cultural memory, because what we do is adapt.
Yeah.
It's going to.
And we adapt toward, as most species do, so that it can survive. So if you say immediately upon arrival in such a traumatic situation, the heart, the mind, the soul said, grab my hand and let's acknowledge, even in the midst of all of this hell, we made it. However that faith system is. And immediately if we understand that how we do that is not honored by the system in which we are expected to survive, but yet it was my first, my second, my third thought to show some sort of reflection of my faith or some sort of acknowledgement of my God. Whatever it became that, because that is indomitable. That is that which does not die. That connects back to the theology that a lot of us profess, but we haven't really researched, that spirit is constant. Mm-hmm. Spirit is constant. That is a huge reconciliation of spirit to itself. Like, yes, you just went through the most awful experience of your life to date. I'm still. If you're in relationship with me, I'll be in relationship with you. This is why the institution still survives, even for us to critique it and put it back together again.
Yeah.
Because long ago it was decided, I will be here for you if you are here for me. The various manifestations of that, it's still working.
Yep. The lesson that the Black church needs to remember is that it was built on a foundation of people with differing beliefs.
Yep.
Those people came and said, all right, you believe that thing over there? We believe this thing over here, but we're here together. Somewhere along the line, we picked up this idea that it's this one thing and it can only be this one thing. And that separates the community because it says, well, you're this other thing over here. We're not on the same side. So the Black church has to remember that rooting, that yes, we believe differently and we still here together. We still struggling against the same system. Right. And the system is evolved. We have to evolve.
Yep.
And that includes evolving together.
Yep.
And so that is Black History Month, episode one. We've come a long way on the show.
Yeah.
2-3 seasons ago, we would not have had an episode like this, but but we're learning, we're growing, we are evolving, yeah. And we hope that you continue to do this with us. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.